This is The Science of the Matter, a podcast brought to you by Medical Affairs at Astellas.
Hello and welcome to The Science of the Matter. This podcast is a forum where we can discuss science, learn the stories behind, and meet guests that have made a big impact for patients. My name is Helena Jones, and in this episode, my co-host Merja Utriainen and I have the pleasure of speaking to scientist and researcher, now Professor Emeritus, Kari Kiviriko. Professor Kiviriko was part of the origin story of a class of inhibitors that made it all the way from bench to bedside, to the bedside of patients with chronic kidney disease that develop anemia. Now, we're about to dig into part of Professor Kiviriko's story that began with his PhD studies of the hydroxylated form of the amino acid proline. And later, the enzyme that execute that hydroxylation, the proline hydroxylases, or the prolyl hydroxylases. And here comes the important bit. This reaction, or that hydroxylation, turned out to be the specific molecular switch that the oxygen-sensing enzyme uses to govern the expression of hypoxia response genes. Let me say that again. That hydroxylation turned out to be the specific molecular switch that the oxygen-sensing enzyme uses to govern the expression of hypoxia response genes. It was unknown how cells could detect fluctuations in oxygen tension. There had to be a mechanism for it, and it turned out to be an enzyme with low affinity for oxygen that specifically hydroxylates the amino acid proline on key transcription factors. Professor Kiviriko's studies evolved over time, but this story really took off with a phone call that changed everything. A call that led Professor Kiviriko to play a major part in the research that later turned out or resulted in the development of inhibitors for the oxygen-sensing enzyme, hypoxia-inducible factor prolyl hydroxylase, and a treatment for renal anemia. This is that story. But before we begin, let me give you some background on Professor Emeritus Kari Kiviriko. Professor Kiviriko has a long and exciting research career with nothing more than an astonishing track record. He was appointed a professorship of medical biochemistry at Oulu University in Finland in 1970. He has trained about 50 PhD students, 19 of which have become full professors in Finland and other countries. And needless to say, to achieve something like that, you need major research funding from the Academy of Finland. Professor Kiviriko has had a big impact in the field of medical biochemistry in Finland and beyond. Welcome to this episode.
And here we are. Merja Utriainen and I are meeting Professor Emeritus Kari Kiviriko on site at Oulu University. And the warmest welcome to you.
Thank you, Professor Kiviriko.
Very happy to have you here. So with that, let's start with your story of what got you into protein science and medical biochemistry.
I started my research career as a young third-year medical student when I asked the professor of medical chemistry at the University of Helsinki to give me a research project, which I could subsequently perhaps continue as a PhD thesis project. Mm-hmm. He suggested that I should study hydroxyproline, and he predicted that it may turn out to be an interesting and important research area in the future.
Yes.
His prediction was definitely correct. I have studied hydroxyproline as one of my main projects during my entire research life, and the area has been interesting and has been important. I got my MD first and then PhD, and after a little bit after I had got my PhD, I got a surprising letter from Dr. Darwin J. Prokop in Philadelphia, who said that he had read my papers and asked whether I would like to spend a postdoctoral fellowship in his laboratory in Philadelphia.
Okay, so you were headhunted to a postdoctoral fellowship.
That's what happened.
Already, wow.
And actually, I didn't have to apply any money or do anything. He had everything ready. I was extremely lucky. So I went with my family for 2 years in Philadelphia.
Okay.
And because I had been studying hydroxyproline, we started to study the enzyme prolyl hydroxylase. One factor, but there are actually two important facts about hydroxyproline that were known already when I started as a young medical student. One fact is that if you give cells hydroxyproline, hydroxyproline is not found in protein, but instead, if you give proline, about half of the prolines that become incorporated into a precursor form of protein called collagen are converted to hydroxyproline in a reaction called prolyl hydroxylase.
Right.
And the other interesting aspect about hydroxyproline was that it was not known to be found in any other protein except collagen. Then we thought that there was only one collagen. Now it is known that collagens are a family of proteins with almost 30 members, and there are additionally many collagen-like proteins. They all contain hydroxyproline, but essentially all the hydroxyproline in our body is indeed found only in collagen and collagen-like proteins. So we started in Philadelphia to study the reaction prolyl hydroxylation, which was catalyzed an enzyme. We characterized that enzyme to certain extent during those 2 years. We purified the enzyme, and we learned in part by our research, in part by others, that the reaction requires an iron atom at the catalytic center of the enzyme, and also molecular oxygen, and a compound called 2-oxoglutarate or alpha-ketoglutarate. And subsequently it was learned that the 2-oxoglutarate is converted during the reaction to another compound called succinate.
Okay.
And at the same time, carbon dioxide, CO2, is formed.
Okay.
So, well, I had very good 2-year period in Philadelphia. A little bit after I had come back to Helsinki, the University of Oulu in Northern Finland declared that their professorship in medical biochemistry at their new Faculty of Medicine was open for applications. I decided to apply. I turned out to be one of 16 applicants and by far the youngest. I had no plan to move to Oulu because I didn't get thought that there would be any chance to get appointed. But to my surprise, in the beginning of year 1970, I got a call from the dean of the Faculty of Medicine, who told me that the international experts had ranked me at position one, and he wanted to know whether I come to Oulu. I moved with my family to Oulu at the very end of year 71 and started full-time work there in 72. And that was actually an absolutely fantastic situation. Our department was in a brand new building. We did not have old instrumentation like most departments have. We had money to buy new instrumentation.
Oh, good.
And the medical school had a large number of young, very talented students who were eager to start research work in our group. So I was able actually to take to my group the best out of very good students. When people say that I have had good research career, that is to a very, very large extent due to those excellent students who have been working in my group.
Yeah, but you seem to have a talent for recruiting good students also.
Yes, to picking up them.
My main point in the interview was trying to tell them how difficult this is, how many disappointments they are going to meet, and trying to see that those who came to the group really know that this is
what they were getting into.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then somehow I seem to be lucky, but I might say that I was reviewing very good students. So.
Yeah. So what happened when you started then at Oulu University? You built a research group.
I built a research group and we started to work first with prolyl hydroxylase. Collagen synthesis have 8 reactions that are characteristic for collagen, and our group has studied all 8 at some stage, but the main focus has always been on prolyl hydroxylase, and also another enzyme, lysyl hydroxylase, that converts lysine to hydroxylase.
Okay.
And first we were working with the traditional methods of enzymology and protein chemistry.
Yeah.
And then gradually we started shifting towards the DNA-based working. At that time, a young student, Taina Pihlainen, was absolutely important. She went also to Prokof laboratory to postdoctoral fellowship. And at that time, Prokof laboratory was just turning their collagen research to the DNA-based research. And she learned all the techniques by being there. And when she came back, she was confident that we can start cloning
yeah,
human prolyl hydroxylase and characterizing it. And when that was successful, then we felt that we can also express the human enzyme as a recombinant active protein. Mm-hmm. When I started in Oulu, we already had an assay for prolyl hydroxylase, and we started purifying the enzymes. We were the first to purify prolyl hydroxylase, homogeneity, and so forth, and characterizing the reaction. And then when we started the DNA-based work, we were the first to clone the two types of subunit prolyl hydroxylase, tetramer 2-alpha and 2-beta subunits. We were the first to clone those subunits and even to produce fully active recombinant human prolyl hydroxylase.
And then what happened? So now for the listeners, can you tell us about that phone call that you received in 1993?
Yes.
And what happened after that?
In autumn 93, I got a phone call from United States. The person introduced himself as Tom Neff, and he told me that he and his partners are going to start a company focused on fibrotic diseases. Those are diseases where overproduction of fibrous tissue, connective tissue, especially collagen, they become converted scar-like tissue, such as liver fibrosis. So those are the target diseases, but the main target protein would be collagen.
Yeah.
And because collagen is known to contain hydroxyproline and other proteins, not the idea was that we develop a compound that inhibits collagen hydroxylation.
Right.
One of the reactants for collagen prolyl hydroxylase is 2-oxoglutarate. We already had demonstrated that certain compounds that mimic 2-oxoglutarate but cannot get hydroxylated inhibit prolyl hydroxylase activity. And actually, I knew some other companies who had briefly contacted me because they were planning to have similar type of programs. But what Tom wanted was much more than simple asking advice. His original plan was that I would become vice president of research of the new company to be formed.
Oh, wow. So you would have two positions?
but I said no. I have to say no. Correct. So I told that I cannot do. And finally, he came up with a plan which said that I will be working in my own department with my own group, and the new company gives us money to hire 3 postdoctoral scientists, additional scientists. And actually, I advertised in local papers because, funnily, at that time, we did not have a big excess pool of postdocs available in Finland,
right.
So I advertised, and one of those 3 whom I hired was Johanna Myllyharju from the University of Turku in southern Finland. She joined my group then in 1994 and is now a full professor at our department. And after my obligatory retirement, age-based retirement in 2002, she is now also the head of our research group, and I was for many years a member of her group.
You're a member now, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was the most important thing. The agreement also gave me money to hire additional technicians and money for reagents and supplies.
Yeah.
What Tom really wanted was that because collagen has hydroxyproline, unlike other proteins, and because collagen hydroxylation requires tuoxaglutarate compounds that inhibit tuoxaglutarate are potentially starting points for medicine development.
Right.
We already had several interesting compounds when a surprise, next big surprise occurred.
Okay, what was that? Next big surprise.
That was that in one day I saw in the new issue of Science back to back two papers from the laboratory of William Kaelin at Harvard Medical School and Peter Radcliffe, Oxford University, UK. And both papers showed that proline hydroxylation plays a crucial role in the mechanism by which cells sense changes in oxygen concentration.
Right.
That was totally unexpected, but because we had such vast experience on proline hydroxylation, probably no one in the world has such expertise. I felt that this would definitely be a good area for the new company.
Okay. Did you need to convince them, or were they
on board? No, I contacted immediately Tom Neff, and he told me, yes, yes, I'm right. He suggested that forget about collagen for time being. Yeah. Focus everything. Yeah. This is something, move fast. And we started to move fast.
Okay.
I will briefly explain how the system works. The cells are continuously producing a protein called HIF, or hypoxia-inducible factor, which had been studied especially by the group of Dr. Greg Semenza at Johns Hopkins University. And it was already known that HIF introduces the expression of a large number of hypoxia-regulated genes, but the mechanism was totally unknown.
Right.
So what these two new papers showed, that HIF has two critical positions where you have proline residues that are converted to hydroxyproline by an enzymic reaction.
Yeah.
And it was clear that the enzyme was very similar to collagen proline hydroxylases. It was an iron containing enzyme. It required molecular oxygen and tuoxaglutarate. But it was not the collagen proline hydroxylase.
Right.
So we already had a large number of compounds that inhibit collagen proline hydroxylase activity by competing with tuoxaglutarate. So the idea was that now we should develop an assay for these new enzymes and then have a proof of concept that we are right, and then let the company to start screening the large number of compounds they already have to see how they inhibit these new enzymes. Originally, we were supposed to start looking for the HIF proline hydroxylase because it was clearly a different enzyme.
Yeah.
But we were again lucky. If before we really got started, a paper came out in Science by Richard Pruick and Stephen McKnight from his laboratory. They had been going through DNA sequence databases using the information which we had published about amino acid positions that are critical for iron binding in collagen proline hydroxylase. So they postulated that this hydroxylase may have a similar iron binding motif. And then they screened through DNA libraries with that information and came up with three candidate peptides, which they expressed in tiny amounts in bacterial cells and showed that they are indeed proline hydroxylases. So they are again three proline hydroxylases that catalyze the same function.
Okay.
A little bit after that, Peter Radcliffe's laboratory identified those same polypeptides. So that helped us enormously. Now we already had the sequences available. Then Peppi Karppinen and Johanna Myllyharju set up a major screening attempt, major attempt to express first to clone the enzymes, then express them in the same system that we had used for collagen proline hydroxylase. And then they modified our collagen proline hydroxylase assay to the new optimal for the new enzyme. That work went enormously fast. They were Peppi and Johanna, and additionally a good PhD student, Maija Hirsilä. And we published the results. 5% started the large-scale screening. We did not have to do that. But before we published our first paper, we took some selected compounds, tested them, and we were able to make the following conclusions. It seems that it is possible to develop compounds that inhibit collagen proline hydroxylase, not inhibiting HIF proline hydroxylase.
That's a very important distinction.
And on the other hand, we were able to find compounds that preferentially inhibited HIF proline hydroxylase, and we only very weak collagen proline hydroxylase inhibitors. Mm. And it even seemed that it might be maybe possible to develop compounds that inhibit one or two of the HIF proline hydroxylases more effectively than all three.
Right.
So we published that piece of information, but we didn't start any large-scale screening that was carried out in 5%.
Yeah.
And very rapidly, they came up with compounds that they thought would be good for
more selective
attempts,
and
good for patients.
Yeah, that is an amazing story. So were there any real highlights, like aha moments for you that you will never forget in this?
Well, I would say that during the whole proline hydroxylase studies, it has been like in all enzyme studies.
Mm.
It is almost so that you are used to have that bad results, but it's always nice when something succeeds. But in general, this story was very clear. We had so much background in collagen proline hydroxylase. I think that no one in the world would have that position, not because of my skills, but because poor luck that something happened in our research field. It was a big Eureka moment for us.
Yeah. So Tom Neff called the right person.
Yes, exactly.
He told me that he had used several advisors and they had advised him that he should not call someone in the United States, but rather call me in Finland, because generally the people in our field knew that this was a strong collagen proline hydroxylase and collagen laboratory.
Mm.
By the way, the next big event then was in 5% to decide what we do with these compounds.
Yep. Yes.
So the big question naturally was that now when we have the compounds, what disease should we be going at?
Yeah.
And Tom Neff was the person who made the decision. He said that we will go to anemia of chronic kidney disease.
Okay.
It is now well known that patients with chronic kidney disease suffer from a severe anemia, which is due to insufficient production of the hormone erythropoietin, or EPO, by the damaged kidneys.
Mm.
That anemia has been treated by repeated injections of recombinant EPO or by blood transfusions.
Mm.
And Tom's idea was that if you have a pill that you take by mouth and that corrects, that increases, if it's the pill contains a HIF proline hydroxylase inhibitor, that increases EPO levels. The EPO gene is one of the most sensitive HIF-regulated genes, so EPO levels will increase, and that will increase the hematopoiesis.
Mm.
And this is exactly what happened.
This is exactly.
We were a little bit wondering whether that can happen when the kidneys are damaged, but no, it happens very well.
Yeah.
And so the hemoglobin levels go up.
Yeah.
First, of course, the EPO levels go up and hemoglobin levels go up. And actually, because it's not EPO what we are giving, but the pill that turns on the hypoxic response, iron absorption also goes up, and there are many additional beneficial events that we didn't even expect. So
what do you think made his decision to go into renal anemia? Was it the science behind it, or did he have experience with renal anemia? He seemed to be very set.
He had some experience. He was also originally an investment banker, and he had been evidently involved in some money collection very early in the 90s to companies that were studying renal anemia. So he knew renal anemia, and he also knew already the value of EPO. So he thought that.
That's an important part of the story, I think, because there were many options, but he chose renal anemia as a target?
Actually, Bill Galen, who got the Nobel, one of the Nobel Prize persons, he told me that he was very much surprised originally when Tom said anemia.
Okay.
But now he admits that that was a very wise disease.
Yes, yes.
Did I mention that Bill Galen, Peter Radcliffe and Greg Semenza got the 19...
Let's talk about the Nobel Prize.
Yes. Mm. So we all felt that this was absolutely something unexpected and unusual that fulfills the criteria of Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
And I actually discussed also with Tom Neff and told him that I predict that Bill Galen and Peter Radcliffe will get the Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it was a pleasure to learn in 2019 that the Nobel Prize was awarded to Greg Semenza, who was working with the HIV, and then really to Bill Galen and Peter Radcliffe, who elucidate this role of proline hydroxylase in the veins.
Yeah.
A how cells sense to changes in oxygen availability.
Yeah. They really connected two parts of the story, the HIF transcription factors with the enzymatic activity, and together that became the story of a very physiologically relevant mechanism where we can help patients.
Yeah, I think that it is, if you read the criteria of Nobel Prizes in general, I would say that this discovery extremely well fulfills the criteria that are supposed to be. So I thought it was, from the very beginning, I thought that this is very likely get the prize.
Yeah.
Still, it took quite a while before the Nobel Prize was actually given, so from the original publications.
I think that the reason was this was Nobel Prize of Medicine, that they wanted to see a little bit how the field
evolved,
the medical significance of that discovery. And then when it became obvious that companies are now developing already compounds that will become medicine for something based on this idea, then I think they have been thinking now it's the time to give the prize.
So you've had a very long now career in this field. What are you the most proud of?
Well, we have got many interesting results over the years, but I have always felt that maybe one of the most visible part of our success have been those about 50 PhD students whom I have trained and those 19 professors, and they may be even more in the future. We will hear in this podcast later, Peppi Karppinen and Johanna Myllyharju, both are examples of those. I have especially stressed the name of Taina Pihlajaniemi, who was very crucial in when we started to move from protein chemistry to DNA chemistry in our proline hydroxylase work. And Taina is now the vice rector of sciences of the whole university. And still runs a very successful research group.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. So Oulu University has a very strong hypoxia and collagen research today with 5 research groups collaborating and working together, really, because it needs to be a collaboration.
It is, and I think I'm very glad that that has happened. And it is actually so that Johanna, Peppi and Taina all have been in my group. Taina, coming back from Prokop Laboratory, gradually started to focus to her field, especially identification of so far unknown collagens. When she started in Prokop Laboratory and came back, she built an own group. Then Peppi and Johanna were in my group. Gradually, when I retired, Johanna became the head of my group, and then it had 2 arms, Peppi and Johanna, and gradually it became more like 2 groups. And this has been a slow evolution.
It evolves, and it's
from
gonna
one group towards 5.
Yeah, and it's gonna continue, I suppose, because it has such a solid foundation here in Oulu. That is a legacy and an amazing heritage. Do you have any advice to researchers, to PhD students, or postdocs, or young research group leaders that is something that you've learned over the years that is a must to succeed?
I always tell them when they come to my group that research is mainly disappointments and the ability to start again and again and again, modify the plan and go again. That's the most important. If people who give up after every time when something fails, they stay home for 1 month and are unhappy, they cannot do it.
They're not going to last. I think that's a very important piece of advice. It's to be patient and
learn from your disappointments and then move on.
To keep going, Yeah, so I think that the whole story is an amazing example of, I would say, quite smooth over the years. There's been lots of those moments where there's been a little bit of luck involved, but on a solid foundation of many years of research, starting from the 60s and the 70s and the development of assays and purification methods.
You might see that the professor says me, when I was third year medical student, study hydroxyproline. Hydroxyproline questions related to it may turn out to be interesting and important in future.
Right.
And it's today, still today. Yeah, if I would be a patient, I would prefer to take a pill instead of going to see a doctor or someone to get the IPO injections regularly.
Yeah.
Or even worse, if there are people who cannot take IPO recombinant or IPO, so then you have the blood transfusions. And
but we can say thank you so much, Professor Kivirigo, for taking the time to tell us your story. And
it's been a pleasure to meet you and have you here.
It has been a great pleasure to meet you. And I think this is very, very nice that you have this type of podcast.
This is The Science of the Matter,